Like when you hear commentators, you hear them talk, they just say bullshit. Like this won't be obvious to the average person,
Wait, wait,
but
wait, wait, wait. I'm a commentator. Are you saying that
like pretty much
90%
all
of
commentators.
the
No, I
times
mean I
what
do
I'm
it
saying
too.
is bullshit?
No, without increment, then I understand. You can try to flag someone. Hey, if you flag Gary in this position, I don't know what kind of wrath you'll endure. Can you imagine that you spent 6 months on any project? And not only that, a project which didn't even finish.
Yeah.
And basically, your entire career is hinging on this project, just 6 months every day, and one mistake, and it's over. And then it doesn't even end, right?
Well,
And then
it's
the
six
next year, you start all
intensive
over again.
months. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the C Squared Podcast. Another week, another tournament won by you, Fabi. Congratulations, Chess9LX back-to-back champion. No, wait, never mind. You didn't win
No.
it last year. Last year it was Sam Sevian. You fought all the way until the end last year as well, but this year you took the bull by its horns early on. You took the lead very, very early in day one, 3 out of 3. So very good start, and you kept it all throughout the event. I have to say, quite impressive. How are you feeling right now?
Yeah, pretty good. Last year it was a bit disappointing because I had to beat Sam in the last round. And then I would win clear first, but instead I lost and I got like fifth place. So it was a pretty big difference between clear first and getting nothing. And this year I had to win, although it wasn't clear if I had to, but at some point during the game it became clear I have to beat Ray Robson in the last round because Hikaru went from a bad position to beating Sam Shankland. If I had drawn, it would have been enough for shared first. But of course, clear first feels better. That's no doubt about that. And yeah, it's my second time winning the 9LX, so I'm pretty happy. First time was the most difficult, for sure, because that was a really strong one. This one was not as strong as that, I have to say, but it had Hikaru, who is still the Fischer Random reigning world champion. I mean, there is no
Okay,
world championship, so nobody can
it's
fight
kind
for
of
the
funny to
title
say that,
anymore.
right? Because
No, it's funny to say because he won it 2 years ago,
I think
more than
like
two
3 years
years
ago,
ago. No, 2022. It was.
2022.
It was.
Okay.
But okay, in you can't really say. I mean, it's of course a world championship, but you can't say at some point you can't be the world champion forever. Like there has to be another event organized, or just like you're world champion forever. You won it once, and that's it. They have to at some point organize it again. Otherwise, the title, of course, it doesn't run out, but like it can't be forever.
It sort of feels like a missed opportunity, right? And I don't know exactly why it's not happening. Obviously, chess.com organized it a couple of years back, and I think chess.com organized it in 2021 or 2020. I don't remember exactly when we went to Norway.
That
But
was 2019 when
20
Wesley
was it
won.
2019? 2019.
That's
Yeah.
2019.
So after 2019, they took a break, then they organized it again 2022. So it seems like it's happening every 2 to 3 years, but the question is why?
Just
What?
random.
Yeah, it's very random.
Yeah, it would be fun to have more. I mean, we have the Fischer Random events, which are called the freestyle events, organized. Well, one was organized in Germany so far, but it looks like they're continuing. That they're going to continue that cycle, if you want to call it a cycle, but a series of tournaments, which I'm excited about. I mean, we're playing a promotional match. Magnus and I are playing in Singapore.
Yeah, that's
Later
exciting.
this month, November. Yeah. So, but the Fischer Random is very haphazardly organized very often. It doesn't have much infrastructure for the moment. I think it would be interesting. I mean, it's definitely a very valid form of chess. Some people don't like it, some people love it. Okay. I enjoy it. I think part of it's what like Hikaru said, part of it that it's a lazy form of chess because you don't really have to do any preparation. Like preparation, yeah, you can do, but it's not like normal chess where even in blitz you have to do some preparation for openings. Otherwise, you really get left behind, especially for classical. But Fischer Random, of course, you can't analyze everything. It's just okay. Maybe, I mean, even remembering that you saw the position before is a challenge.
Do you
Like
feel
we had.
maybe this is why it's not viewed or not as organized and it's almost viewed as a side event? Is it because the protagonists, the players, there's not full tension, right, in the tournament? You know, because you also mentioned it yourself, you kind of take it as not a joke, obviously, but a fun event, right?
Sure. I mean, it's a fun event, but also it depends. Like this event, it's 3 days long. It is sort of, also getting Gary back in the ring. It's sort of more of those like fun, not exhibition. I wouldn't call it an exhibition type event, but it's between like very serious and exhibition type. Similar to the match against Magnus that I'll play. It's like it's serious, but it's also exhibition in some way. Like we're not fighting for a title or anything, right? But the tournament which I played in this Bison House event, the Bison House is the name of the resort,
Yes.
earlier this year, where I played in the final against Magnus, and before that I played Levon, before that I played Gukesh. That I took very seriously because it felt like this kind of big, very hyped up event, a lot of viewership, a lot of showmanship, if you want to say that too. Like it was very well organized. Magnus was there, of course. That always, if you win a tournament ahead of Magnus, it does add an extra layer. Like there are some players that I do view them as, if they're in the tournament, they add prestige. And of course, Magnus is the number one player, and I would say Hikaru is also one of those players because if you look at the tournament we just played, he's still putting up a huge score. He didn't win the tournament. He got clear second, but 7 out of 9, the score that he had, normally wins. So, you have to keep up the pressure when certain players are playing, right? So, definitely Magnus adds to the prestige and Hikaru as well because he is number three in the world, and I would say the younger guys as well. Like if you're winning a tournament where you have all the young guys, Alireza, Gukesh, Prague,
Well,
Arjun,
that's the thing.
Mirabeth.
It's all about the stories, right? And the storyline and who you're fighting against, the rivalries that are being built outside of the actual playing hall, right?
Sure. I don't care about the narrative stuff. I mean, it's just who I view as the most dangerous opponents
But
also.
that's what you said when you said the showmanship and the
Well, that too.
organizing, putting up a front, putting up a spectacle for everybody, right? For the fans, for the players as well. It
Yeah,
adds an
well,
extra layer of prestige, but also of pressure.
definitely. Yeah, well, I think the having the eyeballs on it, of course, like if I were to play Magnus and it wasn't televised, I would care, of course, to play well, but it would feel strange. It would feel like, okay, I guess I'm playing for some money. Nobody will ever see it. I know that sounds very strange, but it does add something, of course, the viewership. So if you have a very big event where that, on a single day, maybe 50,000 people will be tuned in. I don't know the numbers, of course, for every event, but the more numbers you have, of course, the more prestigious there is. And also, the more prestigious it is, the more numbers you have. So it goes both ways. Like the candidates, people might think, okay, 14 round classical tournament, it's just boring. That's what people would think, but that's where you get all the viewers, the candidates in the world championship, even though, of course, on paper and actually objectively, I would say a two player 14 round match is not very interesting from a chess point of view. I mean, you have one game going on at once. It might even be a dull draw. But the viewership will be there because it's called the World Championship. It has prestige. So anyway, that's a side point, but the main point of like who adds prestige in terms of being able to score ahead of them, definitely that Hikaru was playing in the last one, I would say, makes me also feel quite good about the victory because he's able to put up these big scores. He's a 2800 player. He's one of the, well, the only three 2800s at the moment. So he's one of them. And so to score ahead, and especially when he's scoring 7 out of 9 to score ahead, it is quite, quite a good feeling. And yeah, Magnus, well, definitely that's even better to score ahead of him. That's always quite important because, if you look in terms of the last like 15 years, don't know if 15 is too much. Maybe the last, 10 years, but even a bit more than 10, maybe 12 years. The amount of players who have won a tournament where Magnus is playing is very few. There are very few players who have done that. And they're all players who have gotten 2800, I think. So it would be, well, I mean, of course, I'm not going to list everyone, but it would be really the creme de la creme. And many players, even great players, have not managed to win a tournament that Magnus has played in, you know.
Yeah.
So that's always prestigious.
Yeah. No.
Anyway, I think we're kind of going off on a
Back
tangent a bit.
to back. Definitely, victory is definitely a satisfying feat. Now, another thing that I was having some fun with, and I know some of the fans were having fun with on the forums as well, was the fact that obviously some people have branded you no talent, all prep, whatnot. This was a funny discussion. Levon also chimed in after the tournament. Imagine what Fabi would be doing if he had some talent. That was a funny tweet. Is that some extra incentive for you to kind of tell everybody, hey, look, I'm not all prep, you know, even though this is just a funny narrative that's been evolving around you, but is this something that you're thinking about at all?
Like, not at all. I have no insecurities about my play. No, the thing is, I have in general thought about like, okay, why this became a thing. Not even like the kind of who has more talent, because we've discussed that. I mean,
Yes. Yes.
that's on the record, right? We've discussed that. I don't really know if I understand like the clear definition of what talent is, and everyone will have a different definition. So that's. But like the very often there was a narrative that I, you know, bad at Blitz, right?
Correct.
And then the thing is, like, I think a lot of it was media driven. Well, chess media. Because people just
100%.
say something. Like when you hear commentators, you hear them talk, they just say bullshit. Like this won't be obvious to the average person,
Wait,
but
I'm a commentator. Are you saying
yeah.
that
Like pretty much
90%
all
of
commentators. No,
the
I mean,
time what
I do
I'm
it
saying
too.
is bullshit?
I do it too, because I've done commentating, and you have to sometimes fill the air, and you can't always say something smart.
That's true.
So very often you just start yapping.
You go on
So you just say,
tangents, yes. Yapping, that's a
and
funny word.
just to make sure that there's no empty space, right? You don't want to have a silence during the broadcast. So, and then you hear it with, like, if you watch these chess.com broadcasts, I'm not going to call out anyone out directly, but you hear like a chess.com broadcast. Also, I'm not saying it's I'm not trying to frame it as a criticism, because I'm saying I've done the same thing. I know how it is when you're a commentator and you just have to fill the space
Yes.
and you end up saying whatever. But you watch these chess.com broadcasts where they have to talk nonstop. It's very fast-paced. And it's entertaining, so they're not doing a bad job. But then you actually listen to what they're saying half the time, and it's like pure narrative based on nothing. It's like, oh my God, this guy is the most creative player ever. And then you watch, like, I was watching the Global Chess League thing,
Yes.
and then it's just like superlative after superlative after superlative. 2 moves in, it was like, oh my God, you know, Humpy just lost a game, but wow, she's fighting on. So it's amazing to see. And it's move 3. I'm like, what do you mean fighting on? It's amazing. What do you expect her to do? Not show up for the game? I mean, it's move 3. Like, what are you saying? It's just like, you know, over-exaggerated statement after statement. I'm like, okay, just chill out for a second. You know, the game hasn't started. We don't have to go crazy just yet. Of course, chess can be exciting, and the commentators should hype things up. I'm not saying that that's not my strong suit, right? I'm not hyping things up too well. Some do it really well, like Tanya, for example, always keeps energy up. It's actually impressive if you've done it and you know how difficult it is to keep energy for hours at a time. But it sometimes it's like, okay, I understand chess well, and I know that what you're saying is bullshit, because
But also, you have to think in terms of the narrative, and the commentary is not aimed for you. It's mostly aimed for
sure.
the audience that's about 1,000, maybe 1,500 at best. But the
Yeah,
majority of
I'm
people watching are about 1,000, maybe newcomers to the chess world. They need to see something that's exciting. They need to see something that's less didactic. Yeah, that it has more less the feeling of a lecture, and
Yeah,
rather
no,
a
like
show.
I understand it's a show. It's supposed to be entertaining, and sometimes reality is just not entertaining. But a lot of these narratives get driven by people just saying something that they've heard before.
Yeah,
So it's
100%.
Common one is Rapport is the most creative player on the planet, which again, I'm not trying to just say it's dispel it's the statement, right? He is a very creative player for sure, but then you end up with these things where someone will say, oh, he struggles at Blitz, and then this just turns into this like snowball, and then suddenly, I can't play against 2400s at Blitz, and that's basically where it like at some point reached. It was like, oh my God, he's so bad at Blitz, just can't play against anyone. Yeah, 2200. Which I mean, again, I don't care really what the internet thinks, but this is where the narrative comes from.
And this is what sells the tickets. This is what puts butts in the seats, you know? So people wanting to see 2400s beating Fabiano Caruana because they know Fabiano Caruana is supposedly bad at Blitz. And then they're going to have something to talk about. If somebody actually 2400 manages to beat you, then they're going to be like, oh, I told you so. You know, Fabi's crumbling all the time in Blitz. He cannot play Blitz, et
Well,
cetera, et
yeah, of
cetera.
course. I mean, it is possible to say bullshit, and I would not do it to that extent, especially if someone knows better. But yeah, it is an idea. I mean, but
Well,
yeah, these narratives do stick around.
we are becoming kind of like a sport which is trying to break out of its image, right, of being this boring, nerdy sport. We're trying to make it mainstream. We're trying to appeal to the masses, let's say. We're not trying to stay within the niche, I would assume. I at least that's my feeling. That's my feeling that that's what chess.com is trying to do. All the YouTube presence of chess players and chess media, and so on and so forth. So I feel this is kind of the trajectory we're on right now. Even, and that's a good segue into what I had prepared as my next question. You saw the moment when Gary basically forces Sam Sevian to resign.
Yeah, I saw.
As resignation, he's waiting for resignation, but another check is going to bring his king. Oh, we had a fumble
That was, first of all, a very funny moment. I don't think I've ever seen that. Have you ever seen that?
Probably not, but it is pretty common if you're playing casual Blitz where
Casual
if
Blitz,
it's going,
yes.
yeah, it's
Casual
just like,
Blitz,
okay,
yes.
resign, it's over. I
Yes.
mean, and there's usually an agreement, like, although I once had this, well, recently with Mikhail Antipov, we were playing Blitz, and then he thinks that it's going to be a draw. We both have probably like 8 seconds left, maybe less. And he's like, okay. He's like, great. Like, okay. It's a, well, now I'm looking at the position. I'm like, wait, this is not a draw. So I continue playing, and it is winning, or at least it's like good winning chances for White.
You remember we almost had a fight about this at a camp in 2018?
Yeah, because I didn't want to play the game anymore, and you wanted to continue. I mean, to be fair, you were right in that instance. I don't remember the position too well.
It was some
Yeah, I
sort
guess
of
you.
opposite color bishops. I had a pawn up and I just wanted to keep on playing. I think there were rooks on the board as well. And you were like, no, no,
Yeah.
no, no, no. This cannot be played further. Then we
No, I
played
mean,
it in the end.
I think it's fair to play on pretty much. But okay, this is rare. It's a competitive game, and players basically. To be fair, Sevian really could have resigned any moment. I mean,
Yes, of course.
there's nothing to discuss.
Of course.
There's absolutely nothing. I mean, even if Sevian was playing 1800,
No, it's
I
over.
don't think there's anything to discuss.
It's over.
15, I don't know. To be honest, we're discussing levels now that I don't even know what that means anymore. But basically anyone who has any familiarity with chess wins this without thinking. So there was no reason for him to play on. He was just playing through inertia,
Was there
don't want
increment?
to sign.
There was increment, right?
Yeah, of course, of course. No, without increment, then I understand. You can try to flag someone. Hey, if you flag Gary in this position, I don't know what kind of wrath you'll endure, but yeah, it was normal to resign, and that's why Sam did not really protest. He was probably ready to anyway, and Gary was like, "Okay, let's get it over with." So, I was talking to Gary after the tournament. Very interesting always to talk to him.
Of course.
And like, we haven't seen him play chess in a professional way in 20 years now, nearly 20 years, right? 2005 was his last major event, which he won. Linares 2005. Lost in the last round against Topalov, but
Topalov, yeah.
despite that, did win the tournament. And I think shared with Topalov, if I'm remembering. But when you talk to him, you understand like the kind of chess history he was part of, not just his strength, of course. His strength is obvious. He dominated the chess world for 15 years, if not more. Arguably more. But at the very least 15 years, that he was world champion from 1985 until he lost against Vladimir Kramnik, the world championship match. But even after that, he was still a dominant force. But then we talked about his first match, which of course is a well-known story, against Anatoly Karpov. It was his first world championship match. The match did not end.
The long match.
Right? It just didn't end, because it was first to six wins, and Karpov no could not get past five wins. So the match went on so long that it was terminated rather controversially, but by FIDE, by Kampomanis, president of FIDE, decided to spare the players, I guess. And like, when Gary was telling the story about how long they were there, how many seasons they went through. So they were at the hotel for 6 straight months, two floors that they had rented, two entire floors. They went through so many, they went through 3 seasons. Players had were going, coming back, going, coming back to play different tournaments, the Olympiad and so on. There was a parade for a celebration, and the KGB installed lookouts on one of their floors to make sure, nothing was going on in the parade, because they were on like 16, 17 floors high up. But can you imagine 6 months? It's not, you're not playing all the time. I mean, they had long, long breaks,
Honestly,
and
I
they would
don't.
travel.
I cannot imagine. I think this is just a completely different world. I don't think anybody would go through that right now. I think the world is just
Yeah,
moving faster.
they wouldn't go through right now, but can you imagine that you spend 6 months on any project? And not only that, a project which didn't even finish,
Yeah.
and basically your entire career is hinging on this project, just 6 months every day, and one mistake and it's over. And then it doesn't even end, right? And
Well,
then
it's
the next
six
year you start all
intensive
over again.
months, but you could also claim that, the preparation we've done for the candidates, the preparation you've done for the World Championship match, that's a lot of months at a time in
Sure.
preparation before the
Yeah,
event.
but
Obviously,
it's
it has
different.
breaks.
You spend it in one place. It's different. Like, when you prepare before the match, you're not in the competitive mode, so you don't
Right.
have the pressure of having to play. Like, I'm, you know, we're pre preparing. I don't have any nerves because I'm not thinking, okay, tomorrow I have to play a game, or in 3 days I have to play a game. While there, it's like, even if it's going to be a short draw, and then you have, I forget the schedule that they had. Maybe it was like 3 games a week. I don't know exactly.
It's still huge intensity, huge
Yeah, but
pressure.
you still have to deal with just the stress. You're always thinking about it. So, and then if you actually calculate how much time he spent world championship matches, I think he like ran the numbers kind of quickly. It was like 170 days for first match. Then the next matches all against Karpov from 85 until 1990. Not every year, but those were the matches. Years ended in 1990 against Karpov. That was like another 290 days, and then he played Nigel Short, he played Vishy Anand, and he played Vladimir Kramnik, his
Yeah.
final world championship match. And then, like, how many years are we
A
talking?
lot.
Just playing matches. I
And preparing
mean,
for the matches. add the
No, preparing
preparation as
them,
well.
you're adding so much more time. Of course, it was just remarkable to be part of, to be so significant in chess history.
It almost
So, yeah.
feels like you spent all of those years just entrenched in the chess world, entrenched in either preparation, popularizing the game, doing simuls and whatever he was doing, giving press conferences and whatnot, and playing matches and tournaments, right? I mean,
Oh,
it's
we all
just a
do that.
life dedicated to chess, more or less.
I mean, we all do that, but the World Championship is
It's
special. It's different.
completely different,
It's
yeah.
very distinct from normal tournaments. I can say with some experience that it's very distinct. Now, I did it for, let's say, a month, or however long we were actually in London, plus the preparation. But to do it for like 2 years, and yeah, that's why also, I mean, there's a debate like who's greater, Magnus or Gary. And I think we also do have to consider the historical aspect. Like it's somehow different as deserving as Magnus is of being called the greatest of all time. Gary is maybe more deserving. I don't know if that's if that makes sense to be more to, yeah. But yeah, of course, talking to him was interesting. Playing him is always interesting, although obviously he's not a professional anymore. He struggles in ways and he still has many strengths, but he does struggle in some significant ways
Yeah.
in terms of how he's, his practical decisions over the board.
Yeah, no, I'm actually excited to see Chess 960 kind of evolve, and I'm curious to see what the next iteration of it will be. Very exciting match, the one against Magnus that's coming up later in November. I think you mentioned you're quite excited about it, but we don't really know much about it. Do you know at least the format? Like how many games you're going to play? What's the
I
time
really can't
control?
tell you any more details. I just don't. I don't know all the details. I just don't know.
Got
But
it.
I assume that some details will be coming out soon.
Got it. Got it. Yeah, hopefully the closer we get to the event, the easier it's going to be to get the bottom of it. Are you going to stay in Singapore for a longer period, given that the World Championship match is starting soon
Yeah,
after?
I'll take some time to acclimate.
Ah, you're going before, a few days before.
To be honest, I don't know exactly when, but I will definitely take because okay, the time difference is also pretty major, and that's one of my concerns coming back more so than going there. Because I have to play the U.S. Masters, and okay, coming from Singapore, it's like 13-hour difference from St. Louis, 12 hours from North Carolina, from Charlotte, North Carolina, where I'll be playing. So that's pretty significant.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, hopefully I can survive physically,
It
I don't play 2 games a day, and then I'm also going to be jet lagged, so we'll see. But
it's going to
I'll
be a
be
big stretch. Big stretch for you, for sure. For sure. So definitely in the next
but I
couple of
like the
weeks.
challenge. I
Yeah,
like the
why not?
challenge.
Why not? Next, you're
Also,
young.
I really want to prove that like these open tournaments that it just people always say like okay, you go to open tournaments, you lose. I want to prove that that is not the case.
That was a big debate. Yeah, there we go. There we go. That was a big
Which
debate.
I think it's just based on nothing again. I don't think people have run any numbers on it. I'm not going to say that I have like a clear idea, but I think people just say it because they notice sometimes surprising results. Like you notice upsets, but you don't notice when, someone gains a bit of rating.
Yeah.
So like we noticed when Magnus didn't do well in Qatar last year. Of course, if like Gukesh, Arjun or Noderbeck gain 20 points, people kind of try to sweep this under the rug because it's not part of their narrative. At the Olympiad, that's where they all gained huge rating. But yeah, I don't know. US Opens 2 games a day are of course pretty unique. I'll be probably playing more than one open in the US, probably. So I'll try to get some feeling for how that is, trying to conserve energy 2 games a day is difficult.
Yeah, and the competition is definitely nothing to laugh at. You're going
It's
to be
also a really
facing
strong
like some
tournament, yeah.
strong players, 26, 2650s, but very well prepared 2650s. And especially well prepared when it comes to playing 2 games a day because a lot of them are active within the US, and within the US this is somewhat of a normal feature of American tournaments. Now,
I mean, what is really strong? Like, if you look at the starting list of this US Masters,
yeah, very strong.
After me, it's Awonder, who's nearly 2,700. It's Grigori Oparin, who's 2,653 now. Arian Tari, who's over 2,600. Vasif Durabaili, over 2,600. Donchenko, Mishra, Theodorou, Bortnik, Antipov, all over 2,600. So the top 10 average rating is probably like 2,640, 2,650.
Yeah, exciting. Around. Very, very exciting. Very exciting for to see you compete against these guys in this format. Should be a fun one. I played it once myself. I did quite well, but I don't think I will be returning, at least for the foreseeable future, for the simple fact that I'm a simple man. I'm a family man, and I need to stay at home whenever we have these big holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and so on and so forth. But maybe this time for Christmas, immediately after, I will go to New York as well for the World Rapid and Blitz. Cool. I wanted to ask you one more question before we end this week's episode or this episode. I've seen these youngsters pop up in my newsfeed. 3-year-old, 8-year-old. There's this guy in England, Ethan Peng. He just made 2,300 and he's 8 years old. He just beat Faustino Oro's record. Then today or yesterday, I see this Anish, this new Anish, the new Giri in town, who's like 3 years of age, 3 years, 8 months. He's the youngest rated player or something like that. He's about 1,500. And he knows how to checkmate some checkmating patterns. I don't remember exactly which one they were showing on camera, but it's very funny to see kids as early as 3 or 8 becoming such good players. Do you feel like we're going to see the next generation become grandmasters? I don't know what the record holder is right now. I think it's about 12 years of age. I think it's Mishra. Do you think we're going to see that bar getting set lower and lower in terms of age and kids getting better and better? And what do you attribute that to? If yes.
Not really. I mean, there's obviously a natural limit for it's more likely the GM rate, the GM title comes to them rather than they come to the GM title. And in the sense that there's a natural limit, I would assume, for how quickly a kid can become very, very proficient at chess to the point of grandmaster. But also we don't know like exactly how to compare a grandmaster now compared to, you know, 20 years ago, which is when I guess like Karjakin became grandmaster, right?
Yes.
I would assume around 20 years ago. And actually probably more than that.
I think it's 2004 or 2000 even. So those are the numbers that are flashing.
Not 2000, probably like 2002. But okay, anyway.
It's probably 2004.
I would think there's a natural limit. I mean, even with all the resources in the world, humans are still humans. And I doubt that kids are like changing in such a way, right? You know, the GM title might change. So still it's a very big achievement, but obviously the GM title might not be as big a significant an achievement as it was at some point in the past. I just don't know. Also, you can't really, if you compare when Fischer became world champion, I guess he was around 15 years old, or you compare when Karjakin or Mishra or like different players became world champion. I mean, we've seen it get generally younger, but also when Fischer became world, am I saying world champion?
I'm not sure. I think you said Fischer. Yeah, probably. Yeah, you wanted to say grandmaster.
I meant when Fischer became grandmaster, obviously, when Fischer did not become world champion at 15. But yeah, when Fischer became grandmaster, that title was different. There were less grandmasters. It was more difficult to achieve. So we're comparing things which are not easy to compare because they're over different time periods. And how you achieve that title is different. In terms of like kids becoming stronger, faster, younger, maybe it's really hard to say. I mean, Again, there's not much of a difference in terms of the age that Mishra became a grandmaster. I'll just get the exact age that he became
Who,
grandmaster, which
Mishra?
was, yeah, I'll just tell you the exact age.
12
12 years,
years,
4
yes.
months, 25 days. And Karakin was 12 years, 7 months. Very similar, although they achieved it nearly 20 years apart. So in those 20 years, things that like his record remained unbroken, and then it was broken by the smallest of margins.
But I feel right now we're seeing an acceleration. I feel we're going to see the next Grandmaster pop up at 11, then at 10. I don't want to go to 9, but I think we're
But
going to
again,
get to
like
10.
if it
We're going to
happens, I think
lower
it's
that
going
to
to be
10.
because the GM title becomes easier, not because of other reasons.
You don't
I
think it's
mean,
because of the information flow?
well, you can have all the information in the world, but you can only absorb so much. And to be honest, what we've the information that we could have that we had access to 4 years ago, okay,
It's
it's
the
different
same,
in the
more or
sense that,
less.
yeah, it's more or less the same. Like, okay, some op engines are a bit stronger, so openings are a bit easier to analyze. I don't really think that's why kids are might be becoming GM faster, because openings are a bit easier to analyze. I doubt it.
Is it because of the feedback that you're getting every single time you're logging in on any of the playing platforms? Yes.
Online chess,
And
maybe.
you're
I
playing
mean,
against the
that you can,
strongest players
but I don't
in the
know.
world?
I played on ICC back in the day. Everyone was playing on ICC. You could get a million games a day if you wanted. Is that different now? Like, yeah, you can play a nonstop online if you want,
I
but
want to
I could have done
say
it when I
there
was a
were
kid.
less players playing on ICC back in the days than there are
I
right
mean,
now.
I would spend like 10 hours a night playing Bullet
That's why
to
you
like
became
early
so
hours.
good. Maybe that's why you
No, but
became
like,
so good.
and then I was told, don't do that. It's not good for your chess. No, but I like Hikaru, how many games did he play on ICC growing up, right?
A lot.
Everyone was on ICC. Which, speaking of which, ICC is sort of back, I guess. I don't know. I haven't really checked it out too much, but I guess they're back.
Somewhat back, somewhat back. Cool,
Somewhat back.
Fabi. I think,
But also, like, just
yes,
one thing
yeah,
about
for sure.
three-year-olds. I'm not going to read much into three-year-olds. I mean, yeah, this three-year-old kid, he might be. First of all, it is amazing, of course, to even be moving pieces at three. I mean, three-year-old is barely has consciousness,
I
right?
don't think I
It's
had the consciousness at 3 years old. I actually don't remember any
it's
of it
amazing to be playing
when
chess
I
at
was
all, of
three.
course. But there's a long way to go between playing chess, sticking with chess, continuing to improve at chess, and becoming eventually a super strong player. Which, again, I hope the kid the best. He's only three. I did see the video. It was like a ladder checkmate. It was very cute. Could barely reach across the board, or actually couldn't. I think he was like had to climb on the board pretty much. But yeah, three is three. I mean, this is a baby. You know, it's we can't read too much into what will happen in the future for this kid.
Yeah, cool. We'll leave it at that. I have to tell you, I'm home alone this weekend, and my cat is literally crying, tears in her eyes that she wants to eat right now. It's 6 o'clock and she eats at 6 o'clock and there's nobody else to feed it. So I have to get out of here.
Watch out for burglars.
What?
Watch out for burglars.
Oh. Yeah, no, I'm not
Especially
worried
Joe
about that.
Pesci.
Joe Pesci. Okay. All right.
Wait, was he in, was he the guy in?
Yes.
He was,
Home
right?
Alone. Yes.
He
Of
was,
course.
yeah? That
Yeah,
was him.
of course. Of
I
course.
forget the other guy.
Nobody remembers his name. I mean, he's a very funny guy, but I don't think
I mean, I
he's done
remember
anything
Macaulay
else.
Culkin, but I
Of
don't remember
course.
the other, like, there was two bad guys, right? I just don't
Yes.
remember the other guy. I only remember Joe Pesci.
I don't think he's done a lot of movies. But of course, I know who you're talking about. Very, very funny guy. Cool. Okay. What else should we be? Okay, yeah, I think that's it. I'll ask you. I had some other questions, but I'll ask them next time. Because now
Okay.
it's time to go. Cheers, Fabi. Talk to you in the next few days. And yeah, thanks for sharing everything.
Right.
Cheers.
Talk to you
Bye-bye.
soon.